The Ulster Economics Podcast. The podcast that keeps you up to date with what is happening economy-wise in Northern Ireland. Telling you what you need to know, but not necessarily what you want to hear. It is better to be prepared for the economic environment we're operating in, and not the world we would like to be in. Episode 29, When's It Due? With Siobhan McAleer of The Mortgage Shop. When's it due is a phrase sweeping through households across the country at present, at the water cooler for those of us who still frequent the office, at dinner parties and barbecues. You'll all hear, when's it due, or when are you due? The question is not a reference to a pregnancy or a sarcastic remark aimed at those of us owning barbecue bellies. It refers to fixed rate mortgages. When is your 2-year or 5-year fix due to end? What are you on? When do you roll off, etc., etc. Just like last September, following Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng's economic experiment, interest rates and mortgage rates are front and centre in the news. In view of this, I'm delighted to be joined by Siobhan McAleer, the Managing Director of The Mortgage Shop, which Siobhan founded back in 1992 and which has become one of the largest mortgage brokerages in Northern Ireland, and which also has branches in Great Britain too. You're very welcome, Siobhan.
Thanks, Richard. I was going to say it's good to be back, but I'm not so sure about the subject matter. But anyway, good to be here.
Yeah, we've got you back. We never bring you in whenever it's things are going smoothly in the mortgage market. So how's life treating you anyway?
I'll be retired by the time that comes around. So life's good, yeah.
Anyway, anywhere nice?
Well, we have a family wedding in Italy in August, so all holidays are allocated to that. So looking forward to it.
Very good. I'm going on holiday, but the response to the question, are you going anywhere nice, is no. And no offence to anyone living in Manchester, but it's people I'm going to see. I'll be heading over to spend time with my new grandson, Felix.
Oh, lovely.
And my stepdaughter. And this is the first part of this year's grandchildren. My other stepdaughter is due in September, and I've been asking both Katie and Anna, when's it due, and when are their fixed rates due to end? And I actually didn't even have to ask when I was over there a couple of weeks ago, where seeing Felix, where a mortgage rate letter of an imminent jump in their mortgage payments was wafted in front of my face. Mm. And it was, so we quickly got into the explaining what's going on there. Yeah, but yeah. I suppose, Siobhan, before we dive into the weeds with the mortgage rates, what's going on, just to provide listeners with a bit of the context is how we got to where we are now. And it's been a turbulent last week or so with a couple of unwelcome surprises. The Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee hiked rates last week for the 13th successive meeting. The rate rise was expected, but a half a percentage point increase was not. And that took the bank rate from 4.5% to 5%. And the 7-2 vote in favour of a rise takes bank rate back to its highest level since before the collapse of Lehman Brothers back in September 2008, which brings back many, many memories for myself. And the recent economic data, from stubbornly high CPI inflation figures to strong UK job and wage growth, that has triggered widespread concerns that inflation in the UK is becoming embedded or more persistent. And while we've heard a lot about sticky inflation, where it's not coming down quickly enough, the latest figures for May showed that inflation was indeed stuck, with the half point hike in interest rates followed the May figures with inflation stuck at 8.7%, and that embarrassed economists and financial markets as inflation did not come down and ease as they expected. We've had rising prices for airfares, secondhand cars, recreation and cultural goods, and they all contributed to the surprise. But it's despite falling petrol and diesel prices and some modest easing in food prices, which are still rising at over 18% year on year, the underlying picture is deteriorating fast. Far from slowing, there was a further acceleration in core CPI, which is the CPI measure excluding volatile items such as food, energy, and tobacco and alcohol, and also services CPI. Both these measures breached the 7% barrier, hitting 7.1% and 7.4% respectively, and that is at their highest level since March 1992, which predates both the starting the opening up of the mortgage shop and also my first opening up of an economics textbook as well. So a wage spiral is now appears to be in motion, and that led to the tougher central bank action. And the problem is the Bank of England is not done yet by the looks of it, and interest rates have yet to peak. The expectation that rates could rise to 6% or even 6.25%, which is what financial market expectations are saying at the minute, is what has pushed mortgage rates higher effectively. So, Siobhan, I suppose we thought we were through the worst of it when we last spoke at the end of November last year. When back then, we thought bank rate, well, at least that's what the markets thought, it would peak at between 4.5 and 4.75. I thought they wouldn't go beyond 4.25. Now they're at 5, heading for 6. I was obviously a raving optimist. What are your thoughts in broad terms and what has happened and where we are now?
Back in November, when we went over all this, you know, it was very much the Liz and Quasi show about, you know, low interest rates and quantitative easing. And I mean, that's obviously well gone at this stage. We have a different story now, you know, the story of inflation. Two different stories, but yet for some reason we feel like we have the mother of all hangovers since then. You know, there's a real tension among, you know, mortgage holders. They're being made feel like they're poor, and at the same time, the money in their pocket they know doesn't get them what it once did. So, you know, the whole fear factor with that, it's very disconcerting for the public in general. You know, it just seems to be heaping insult after insult to the ordinary person.
It's almost like cost. We had a cost of energy crisis, cost of food prices crisis, cost of borrowing crisis. It just keeps the crises that we're having. We just keep having another mutation, and it just keeps getting worse.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I think we're all in agreement. The Bank of England haven't done a great job. But you know, they have only one blunt instrument, which is, you know, which is interest rates. I suppose you could argue they also have quantitative easing, which obviously isn't of any relevance in this scenario. But so the only instrument they've got is a cutting interest rates.
Or raising interest rates.
And at the minute, that instrument's playing a very lonely, sad tune.
And it was just back after the mini budget, you said that back in September, it was like hitting a panic button in the mortgage market. And you described what you were seeing back then as pandemonium with mortgages being pulled. Has a panic button been pressed again, or is there any pandemonium out there at the minute in the mortgage world?
I suppose what actually happened in the last quarter of last year, in a way, it sort of put mortgages on the radar for everybody. Everybody who had a mortgage, there was no complacency anymore. They knew it was, you know, something that they can't just park and leave it. Things can happen and can happen quite quickly. So for that reason, I think people's antennae were up. Having said that, we're sort of lulled into a bit of a false sense of security at the start of the year. The lenders appeared to be bringing back deals. They seemed keen to lend. They were even easing a little bit on affordability. So yes, interest rates were going up, but it all seemed quite manageable. And really it has only been, you know, in recent months that we're seeing the big hits coming through.
And would I be right in saying that the scale of the mortgages being pulled at the minute isn't of a scale as what it was back in September. Is that right? But we are still seeing mortgage being withdrawn and banks and mortgage lenders waiting to reprice and bring them back on again.
There is a bit of that. But to be quite honest, it's still around service levels a bit. You know, some of the lenders were keeping deals going and then realising they couldn't process what was coming through.
They were getting inundated.
And when they can't process it, they can't get it offered. And if they can't get it offered, they can pull it because it's pre-contract. So there was all sorts of issues around that. But, you know, the headlines were lenders pull deals, but they were bringing them back on in a few days. You know, there wasn't the uncertainty that there was in September, October time.
Yeah. And I suppose when we're looking specifically at the mortgage interest rates, according to data provider Moneyfacts, I looked earlier this week on Tuesday, that was 26th of June, the average 2-year fix was 6.26%. And 5-year fixed rate products were averaging at 5.87%. And I suppose if you take them back to what their corresponding rates were back in December 2021, when bank rate was just 0.1%, we've seen bank rate effectively doing a 0 to 60 of a sports car and going from 0 or 0.1% to 6% in if it hits 6% in just 2 years. So they've gone, the 2 years back then were just 2.34 and 2.64 for 5 years. Like how are customers reacting to these kind of increases and the prospects of 7% mortgage interest rates?
I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, the examples I've been looking at in the last few days, you know, people who took a 5-year fixed rate are now on a £200,000 mortgage are paying almost £500 a month more. A 2-year fix, even higher. But when those mortgages were agreed, there was a buffer, for want of a better word, on terms of affordability. So when they were being assessed for affordability, they were being assessed at 3% higher than they were borrowing at. So if they were on a deal of 2.5%, affordability was being based on 5.5%. And that could be the saving grace in all this, that yes, there's an adjustment, there's a serious adjustment, but it doesn't mean the mortgage isn't affordable. In a lot of cases, it's the adjustment that's needed to lifestyle and the other areas.
People could afford it, because the bank rates, when it was 3%, it was stress tested by 3%. So that was up to bank rate being 6%, which is where it could go. I suppose it's one thing, something being affordable, but nobody likes to be an extra 500, a month, 6,000 a year on... They're not getting a superior mortgage. It doesn't do anything else. Dead money. And that means that £6,000 that could otherwise have gone on a holiday, going out, going towards buying a car or something like that. So, and I suppose it's worth making the point when I was just looking at whenever the Bank of England was last seriously increasing interest rates back before the financial crisis back in 2007, there were almost 12 million mortgages in the UK. More than half of these were on variable rates, whereas now we have 11 million mortgages in the UK. That's 1 million fewer than back in 2007. And 85% of those are on fixed rates deals. So it's kind of to your point where you were saying about the blunt instrument with the Bank of England raising interest rates. Now it finds that the Bank of England has to, because you've got 85% of the mortgages are on fixed rates, you're waiting for people to roll off 5-year rates, or whether it was 2-year rates 2 years ago, they're starting to come off, or somebody who had fixed a year ago, it's only going to be in another 4 years that they're going to have to experience that. And the problem is, it's the Bank of England is trying to inflict a lot of pain on a very small proportion of people. And those people are concentrated in like their 30s and 40s. And they're trying to do that in order to sort of hit aggregate demand and slow things down. And it's a bit like the And it's still only 2/5 of the mortgage paying has been inflicted so far. We've still got 60% of that left to run. And it's a bit like, so when you're turning a shower on and you're turning on hot and it takes a while and you keep turning and turning and turning, it'll take a while, but then there'll be a lag. But at one point, and I suppose in the mortgage world, it's going to be maybe, depending who you are, a year, 2 years, three, up to 4 years, that it's only then that you become scalded with the full scope of the interest rate hikes. Also notice, like, we're hearing a lot of headlines like linked to that, the interest rate roll-off, about mortgage time bombs and the pain accumulating over the next 4 years. The think tank, the Resolution Foundation, they calculate that in the UK, additional annual mortgage payments will cost almost $16 billion per year more than in December 2021, whenever bank rate was at 0.1%. And that would equate to an average increase for those people remortgaging of £2,900, and that's on top of their food bills, energy bills, etc. So I suppose then, just digging down into the various types of markets within the mortgage market, how, Siobhan, would you see the higher mortgage rates choking off demand in certain sector in certain sectors? You know, is it going to be survival of the survival? I was going to say survival of the fittest, survival of the richest. With, you know, those first-time buyers reliant on the bank of mum and dad, and those people who don't have access to that, they just have to kind of drop out. So if you could just comment on the various mortgage markets, what you're seeing and hearing at the minute.
Well, if we go, I suppose there's the first-time buyers, there's the movers, and then there's buy-to-let market. But, you know, first-time buyers don't know any different, right? They've never had low interest rates. They're making their comparisons to what they were paying in private rent and what they were getting for their money. So the first-time buyer market, in terms of appetite to buy, has not deflated at all. In fact, on the contrary, I think because rents are going up, it's actually pushing them down that road. The bank of mum and dad could be a slightly bigger problem, and that they may not just be in the position to help with deposits, but the appetite from first-time buyers is huge. The problem is supply, but first-time buyer houses are going quickly. They're going at over the asking price still, not as much over the asking price. There's probably half the number of viewers, but instead of having 60 viewers looking at a house, they have 30. Yeah. You know, that part of it is not an issue, and the lenders still want to lend. They need to lend. So the first-time buyers are probably quite happy in their little bubble of not ever having experienced lower interest rates. But supply is the issue, which brings me on to the new people who are moving.
Yeah.
And that is where there's a real issue, because unless you have to, you will not choose to move if you believe you will not get enough viewers, you'll not get enough bidders. You will hold off, and it's that holding off that is causing the problem. And we all believe our houses are worth more than they are. That's just the way we are. So you're not going to take the risk of not getting close to what you think it's worth.
I suppose that on the mover market as well, is what you could see is then if people had got, were first time buyers 2 years ago or 5 years ago, and they were looking to trade up, and their deal is now coming off, and maybe what they were hoping to go for in terms of a house, a bigger house, more bedrooms, garden, etc., that the cost of that has now, of trading up, has now for some become maybe prohibitively expensive, and you're then going to see that kind of seizing up in some of the movement. Yeah. in the property chains and stuff.
And also people who move up generally move and, you know, extend or do up, or, you know, there's usually renovations involved when you're moving on because you have a bit more cash. That's not happening. They're wanting houses that don't need to be done up, that won't need extra capital. So I think there's a lot of factors there, but that is where the big clog is in the market. Because funny, I had a conversation with UPS, who we have a close link to, and that's their story. And And I was speaking to Beth Robinson from Templeton Robinson yesterday, and she said she has lists of people who want to move in South Belfast and they don't have the property.
Yeah.
So it is very much about supply.
Yeah. And that's what I think it will be happening, where it's people, it's going to be transactions, and a slowdown in transactional activity is going to be the big thing in the market in the next sort of like year or so. And I suppose, I think it's interesting what you're talking about. So it's almost like the idea of affordability. Clearly, interest rates going up, higher mortgage payments going up. It's a bit, you know, in explaining the kind of demand in the mortgage market, I sort of think of that Paddy McGuinness old Saturday night show, the Take Me Out, the kind of dating one, where it was like the no lighty, no likey. And what we had, as you said, there were so many viewers for properties.
Yeah.
And interest rates going up, you know, have just meant that more and more lights are going out, you know, and it's probably like no lighty, no affordability.
Yeah.
But it only takes, ultimately, so even if you had 16 viewers and you're down to two, that isn't going to, you know, that can still cause prices to be bidded up because you've got two buyers who want to buy it. So it's, I think what we're seeing clearly in the affordability as well, we're definitely seeing a kind of clearing out of a reduction in the number of people who would be potential buyers because they can't, they're not going to be able to transact at that. But it still is a shortage of supply. Interesting one, I suppose, I'm thinking of the buy-to-let market. Previously, back in November, you said it was like hanging by a thread, and I suppose, has that thread been snipped or?
Fairly much so, I'm afraid. You know, landlords are exiting the market. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Private landlords are exiting the market. You know, there's just too many hurdles. And even with rent increases.
And is that the kind of interest rate, interest only, and they have just been ratcheting up?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all been, you know, they've had tax implications, you know, of having buy-to-let, they've got the rental, you know, they have sort of, you know, even the efficiency thing coming down the road at them. I just think energy efficiency, you know, and a lot of buy-to-let properties are old and dundering in and, you know, expect students to live in them and all of that stuff. It's closing in. And I think for that reason, a lot of people are exiting now. In terms of, you know, your sort of, we're doing a fair few company buy-to-let schemes, but they're professional landlords. They're a different ballgame.
Build to rent kind of.
Yeah. And what I'm talking about are your private individuals with two or three buy-to-let properties.
Yeah.
More hassle where they're worth, and they're not getting the money. They're not making big money on
it. And I suppose that's going to be another, that will be a boost to supply for first-time buyers, but they don't want the kind of fixer-upper kind of things.
No, they don't have the money for those. They don't have the money for the fixer-uppers. And it's also pushing rents up because obviously the supply again is reducing.
And what about co-ownership? Is that what with surging rents and surging interest rates? Is co-ownership the worst of both worlds then, where you get a hand in both those camps there?
I suppose the biggest attraction has always been, in my view, with co-ownership are the people who really can't get access to big deposits. So, you know, I can see it will continue to be a feature in our housing market. But you do wonder about, you know, the rent, the mortgage all increasing. Again, for affordability could be an issue there.
And just thinking in terms of when people are talking about fixed rates, we always talk about people going for like 2-year fixes or 5-year fixes. And the one that has, I suppose, surprised me, having somebody who would have like followed the sort of financial markets over the last number of years when you had record lows, was why people weren't considering the 10-year fixed rates. And I know I've come across a couple of smug people over the last few weeks, and you'll maybe listeners will bump into them at your barbecues and they'll put you off your food, where they're talking about how they secured a 2.8% 10-year deal 3 years ago and isn't that great, etc. Things like longer term mortgage rates are a big thing in the likes of Germany and in Europe, and then even in the US it's 25 years and 30-year mark. What has the demand been like for 10-year fixed rates over the last few years in your experience?
I was hoping you weren't actually going to bring up your mortgages. We have done a share, right? But if we look at that old retroscope, that share should have been significantly higher. It's one of those things, you know, industry is dictated by perceptions, and there's a perception out there that your mortgage is something that should be looked at or should be flexible, or, and 10 years just seemed like a step too far. You know, it's a commodity in the same way as, you know, your internet connection or your phone. You wouldn't tie into them for 10 years. So
it's like a kind of commitment phobe for thing, that length
yeah.
of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I suppose my daughter's generation would refer to as FOMO, you know, fear of missing out if things change and I'm stuck in this 10-year, you know, 10-year fix. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, the broker's crystal balls aren't any clearer than yours, right?
And were they attractively priced, though, or was it, you know, you sort of hear, you know, in some of the mortgage and the financial media and things that 10-year mortgages, whether it's mortgage lenders, aren't really providing them at attractive rates, because I suppose it also ties the lender in, you know, for providing those funds over a 10-year period as well. And they may not be as, you know, more reticent to do that. Is it, were they attractively enough priced, or do you just think it's a cultural thing where we just didn't, you know, I suppose you could have, some people have shorter marriages in 10 years than a 10-year fixed rate. So it's...
In the current market, they were a dream.
Yeah.
I can't put it any more succinctly than that, you know.
It was like the deal. If you were getting one in 2021 or so, it's like that was a deal of the century,
it
really.
Was.
So,
you know, you were talking about around about 2%.
Yeah. And then in terms of... another thing is what I hear increasingly when I'm talking about interest rates, bank rate up at 5%, maybe going to 6%. And I actually heard it today at lunchtime where a guy was saying sort of like, oh, but I remember whenever interest rates were 13% or 14%, and it was, you know, terrible and things like that. But there's actually a guy called Neil Hudson. He's the residential analyst, I think it is. He's called on Twitter, who does a lot of this kind of stuff. And what he's been saying is that 6%, 6 is the new 13. So whenever you had in the early 80s, 1980s and 1990s, where you had interest rates hit 13%, if a bank rate hit 6%, that would be the equivalent of that, because the actual price of houses now is so much higher than it was back then. And the proportion of people's income is higher than it was back then. So, you know, so whenever you, particularly speaking to older people like your parents, when they talk about 13, 14%, this is still going to be really tough on people, because it is a significant proportion of their income is being hit.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at going from probably what was 18% of income to 30, 35%. Of income. But then you have, you know, there has been considerable pay rises and energy costs coming down. So, you know, it's not all sort of doom and gloom. You know, it is just adjustment.
I think what's going to be interesting, particularly given that we're on the run up to a general election next year, or by January 2025 at the latest, is everything is going in the wrong direction. If you were the government in power, be it interest rates, be it tax rises and all of those kind of things. And it's almost going to be, it's the people who are being hit the hardest at the minute. And then if you're, you know, it's older people, the retired who have their pensions, the triple lock, which is then rising in line with inflation, they have... maybe how their houses owned outright, no mortgage free. Yet it's then going to be the people who are seeing real terms pay cuts, childcare costs, all of those kind of things, and their mortgage payments going up, increasing at a rapid rate. That I saw in the Financial Times, where there was one of the journalists was talking about the risk of increased kind of intergenerational infighting is going to go on. And ultimately where I see this being played out politically is then going to be, we're likely to see, if it was to be a Labour government winning the next general election, more focus on redistribution and increasing taxation, wealth taxes of those people who have more wealth, which is going to be homeowners, people age 50 plus, etc., and redistributing that back to the younger generation, which is going to be the kind of battle lines for the next general election, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is an argument to say what has been done, you know, the young mortgage holders that are being hit currently. I mean, was that the smartest way to do this? You know, it's going to be a slow drag because, as we mentioned earlier, those people who are only going to come out of 5-year fix in 2026 still have their extra £500 a month. There's a lot of people out there who have paid off their mortgages. Mm-hmm. You know, you do wonder, okay, a 1% income tax rise, yeah, would have put a nail in the coffin for the Tories, but would it not have had a much quicker effect? And I suppose, as you were talking about the distribution over the generations, you know, death taxes, all of that, you know, it's that balance between economics and politics.
Yeah.
You know, we have to assume based on the polls, the Labour policies are probably going to be the prevalent ones. And they have come out and said, you know, we're not doing anything to help first time buyers. You know, we're not going to bring out any incentives in terms of, you know, getting the housing market going. But, you know, the bottom line is, as they get closer to election time, will the politics take over from the economics, and there will be some sort of, you know,
sugar tax rush, relief tax cuts.
Or yeah. Tax relief for first time buyers, which, okay, is against monetary policy because it's putting more money back in, but at the same time, they will go for what is sexy at the time, and maybe getting the housing market going at that stage maybe is what they want.
I suppose what we saw last week, what the government is trying to do, whether some people maybe view it as window dressing, some people view it as a bit more substance, was the mortgage charter, which they did last week, which was then the Chancellor met with the UK's largest mortgage lenders, agreeing new commitments to support borrowers, and some of the elements were that if you're up to date with your payments, you could switch to a new deal at the end of your fixed rate deal without having to have more affordability checks. There's other things in terms of whether you could then have a period of interest only mortgage payment holidays, etc. What were your thoughts on the mortgage charter, and do you think it's going to help?
I think it will help, actually. I mean, I think anything, I mean, there is a bit of that around window dressing, but the reality is, like, I remember back in 2008 having a commercial loan. I think it might have been with yourselves, actually. And one of many, but I needed to extend the term because I was struggling to pay. And then I remember being really shocked because they had whacked the interest rate up. They'd put on a big fee, and I'm going, when I can afford at least, they're putting it up. So the thing about it not affecting credit is a really good thing. So people can go comfortably and say, I need this. I need to extend my term. I need interest only. I need this. And to know that it's not going to affect their credit rate. And I think that is a big, big thing.
Ironically, it was whenever the pandemic started, people were jumping for the mortgage payment holidies, even
when they didn't need it.
When they didn't need it.
And you can have no doubt that same thing will happen again. But you know what? That's the way it is. If they go to interest only, all they're doing is deferring their capital. So, you know, if you're doing it when you can afford to pay it, it doesn't really make that much sense. But it will be. There's always open to abuse. But I think things like that will make a difference. If people will feel that there's options for them. And as long as they don't make them jump through hoops to get there. And in fairness, during the pandemic, lenders did get their act together, and they did produce, you know, the help that was needed. So No, I wouldn't knock any of that. I suppose the issue I have is that you can't be guaranteed that all the lenders are going to subscribe to it. So it's a lottery. If you're with a lender who will do it, great. If you're a lender who doesn't, you won't. Now, I mean, they are talking about making it mandatory, but, you know, I think that might take legislation and that could put it off. But anything like that, I think for next year, you know, we're going to be wading our way through a fairly high level of manure, for want of a better word. It will get slightly less as the years go on, and eventually we will smell the roses again. But anything that can help us wade our way through that, and any intervention in terms of lenders, it's all, I think it's all good.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's interesting because it was going to be the kind of low interest era, the ultra low interest rate era of when we were having sub 1% and very low rates, you know, that's gone for good in my view.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to get used to that. And it's almost going to be, if you think the average first time buyer, the average age then is about 30. So if you're almost like thinking people of the age about anybody under the age of 40 in the property market, they haven't experienced higher interest rates than, you know, where they are now. And this is a shock to them, but they will adapt and the economy will adapt and we'll have to adjust. And then just finally, Siobhan, in terms of looking ahead, what concerns you the most about the mortgage market or the housing market in general? And so what concerns you the most, and then, and what would you be most optimistic about as well?
Generally, we always, no matter what is going on, there is a healthy appetite for home ownership in Northern Ireland. You know, we do very much take pride in our homes. It's going to be difficult, but I would be fairly positive about the year to come. I think we do need help, we do need intervention, and we do need stimulus to get people to move. But, you know, I think we just need to be very careful about the language that's used around all of this. You know, the word recession isn't being used yet. And that's probably because it is that low, slow drag thing and we're still at 0.whatever% and they're only expecting 1% growth. So it's so marginal.
Recessions or stagnation. So take your pick.
Take your pick, yeah. So, you know, it's not been used. And I think the media, you know, have a responsibility. And funny, it was one of your sort of peers, not colleague peers, you know, used a phrase a couple of weeks ago, you know, that we were on the cusp of a financial nightmare. Like, those words aren't helpful.
No.
Are not good. Maybe, you know, could be argued. Yeah. But that it's that sort of being responsible and measured.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a responsibility when things are tough to create, you know, a future where things are better.
Yeah. Although I think it's kind of recession. It's probably a cost of living crisis probably would strike the, fear into people more than recession, because normally we thought recessions were huge increase in unemployment.
Yeah. Business related. Yeah.
And massive business failures and things. Whereas we're in a period of a cost of living crisis where households and public sector are on the front line of the pain. But unemployment is near record lows and we're not hearing these jobs, you know, so it's almost recession almost like is not the phrase that means has really any relevance during the current period we're in. Clearly, if you had a full blown recession on top of what we have now, yes, you would expect unemployment to rise. It's not going to go to the levels that it would have gone to in previous recessions. But yeah, it's recessions almost, it's not the clear cut thing that we knew it was in the 1980s, Northern Ireland, UK, 1990s in the UK, and, you know, the global financial crisis and things like that. That's recession is more, things are more nuanced. And I think it's what we're more concerned about is then just cost of living, real wages, and it's going to be public sector delivery and budgets and all of those kind of things, which are slow burning. But rather than just focused on the kind of media headline, we're in recession, we're out of recession, whereas you know, it's the longer term thing is more challenging. But no, thanks very much, Siobhan. No problem. And I almost say, I hope we don't have you on again this year, because that means we're going to have lurched even lower in terms of what's been happening in the mortgage market. And but thanks very much, and do have a good summer.
You too. Thanks, Richard.
So what is June's incoming economic data telling us? Well, this morning on the 29th of June, we had the Northern Ireland Composite Economic Index, which is the nearest thing Northern Ireland has to quarterly GDP figures. And the Composite Economic Index for the first quarter of this year saw 1.2% quarter-on-quarter growth. That's very strong, and up 1.7% over the year. That's the second successive quarter of very strong growth, which has surprised economists such as myself. And we now have the levels of activity are 6.3% above pre-pandemic levels, which is Q4 2019. The biggest contributor to the growth was private sector services. So that's everything like retail, hospitality, the other services category, which includes private medical care, which has been booming of late. Record NHS waiting lists clearly providing a stimulus for that. And private sector services also is at a record high for the first quarter of this year. If we then look to the private sector output beyond the first quarter, the purchasing managers indices, it provides an indication of what's been happening during the month of May. And Northern Ireland's private sector recorded output growth 51.8 in the PMI. Anything over 50 is growth. The higher the number, the faster the rate of expansion. Growth for the fourth successive month in a row, but the pace of expansion was the slowest in that sequence. New orders growth was subdued, with some respondents citing higher interest rates and political stagnation as factors impacting on demand amongst local firms. A welcome slowdown was evident in inflationary pressures, with input cost and output price inflation. Input costs, everything such as energy costs, wages, fuel, etc. Inflationary pressures easing to their weakest levels in around 2.5 years. It's also encouraging to note that Northern Ireland's inflationary pressures are the least marked across the UK regions, according to the PMIs. There were some reports of energy prices coming down, with ongoing inflation linked to higher wages. In terms of the sectors in the PMI survey, the services was the only one to record a rise in business activity in May, with construction and retail joining manufacturing in contraction territory. Services also posted the strongest rise in new orders, followed by retail. And retail's recent purple patch of growth in sales and orders. Retail's recent purple patch of growth in terms of sales and orders appears to have passed, although retail is still recruiting hard. Meanwhile, the slump in construction orders continued during the month of May, and that's now approaching 2 years of continuous decline. But again, construction firms are increasing staff levels to address long-standing skills gaps. Encouragingly, all four sectors, manufacturing, retail, services, and construction, they all expect growth in business activity in 12 months' time. Manufacturers are the most optimistic, and retail, given the cost of living crises, etc., not surprisingly, the least. If we then look at the latest labour market data, again, very encouraging. The Labour Force survey showed that Northern Ireland's employment rate for the 3 months to April hit 74.2%. That's returned to pre-pandemic levels. The unemployment rate of 2.4% is already back at pre-pandemic levels as well. We've seen the Labour Force survey, the number of people in employment has now returned back to pre-pandemic levels for the first time as well. The quarterly employment survey for the first quarter of 2013 has revealed employment in Northern Ireland at a record high, with 50,000 jobs, net gain in jobs over the last 2 years. One of the most timely indicators of employment is the HMRC payrolls figures, which is employees only. And It appears to have hit a peak in March, but it has then subsequently seen two consecutive months where employment has fallen. So that's one of the sort of most tangible signs that we are seeing some softening in the labour market at present. We had previously mentioned about inflation remaining stuck at 8.7%, with the underlying inflationary trends deteriorating. That is core CPI, which excludes food, energy, alcohol and tobacco prices. It is accelerated up above 7%, hitting its highest level since March 1992. We're also seeing the concept of drinkflation appearing. First, we had shrinkflation, which was reducing the size of products to conceal price rises. Now we have drinkflation, whereby some beer makers are reducing the alcohol content of their drinks to pay less tax and keeping prices the same. Looking at car sales, local dealers saw a near 20% year-on-year increase in new car sales in the month of May. That's the best May in 4 years. Although outside of the pandemic, May 2023 was the worst May since 2012. Sales year to date, that's the first 5 months of the year, are up 18% year on year, but they're still almost one fifth below the corresponding pre-pandemic period in 2019. The rapid rise in the cost of borrowing for car loans will also act as a new headwind for the sector going forward. So what about the looking at the month ahead? The Bank of England's MPC doesn't meet during the month of July. It next meets on the 3rd of August, although the expectation is that we're going to see another interest rate hike for the 14th successive meeting. The key question is it going to be a 25 basis point rise or a 50 basis point increase? So that will take rates to either 5.25 or 5.5%. We get June CPI inflation during July, and it's expected to see the headline rate ease from 8.7% to 8.2%. But of greater focus will be the core CPI measure that excludes food, energy, alcohol and tobacco. It is expected to nudge higher from 7.1% to 7.2%. On the local economic release front, we have the June PMI. The private sector reported slower rates of growth in both April and May. Will this trend continue in June? Meanwhile, the HMRC payrolls figures for April and May in Northern Ireland also showed signs of a softening in employee numbers. Again, it'll be interesting to see, will this downward trend continue in June as well? In the public sector, we're also expected to see a continuation of the industrial action through the summer months, which will be likely be a summer of discontent and ongoing concerns over the public finances. And we continue to hear on an almost daily basis about new areas, programs or public services which are going to be cut imminently. And finally, we will not be having a podcast at the end of July. It will be into August. So if you're going away and having a holiday, do enjoy yourselves, and back in August we can compare notes about inflationary pressures on holiday destinations. Until next time, I am Richard Ramsay, and this was episode 29 of the Ulster Economics Podcast, When's It Due, with Siobhan McAleer of The Mortgage Shop. You can stay up to date by following us on social media and the ulstereconomics.com blog.